According to a study published in the American Academy of Pediatrics, less work and more play helps a child to learn, develop socially, and promotes better health. Researchers also reported that curbing free time at school robs youngsters of needed exercise, leads to unruly classrooms, and ultimately the tragedy of listening to...
Other station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
Go Shorty, it's your birthday, and you can party like it's your birthday at this beautiful 50,000 square foot Connecticut estate. Live like a PIMP in this 19 bedroom, 19 bath, Mediterranean style mansion that sits on 17 fat acres. Get your drink on in its one of a kind party room that features a disco. You'll feel like you're in the club without leaving your home. Chill with your homies in the private screening and game room, kick it with the hose in the 40-person hot tub, or spit some dope rhymes in the state-of-the-art recording studio. Offered at just $18 million, we guarantee you won't be hating on this beautiful property. Let the Selly and call for an appointment to see this outstanding crib today.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, salute you, Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
You've never once helped a little lady in the kitchen. You've never assisted her with the grocery shopping. But for some reason, when it comes to grilling slabs of flesh over an open fire, it's suddenly a man's job.
You love to handle your meat.
You know precisely how long it takes to cook every variety of meat. A steak, one beer. Brisket, three. An entire suckling pig. Can you say keg?
You're both getting marinated.
When the meat is fully cooked, you're half baked.
Try not to pass out at the fire. Yeah.
So the next time you're wiping barbecue sauce off every one of your appendages, be sure to thank the guy in the Kiss the Cook apron, passed out in the chaise lounge. Mr. Backyard Barbecuer, a real American hero.
Now I think the deck is on fire.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Excuse me, this is Sam and Kara in the Morning. Where the hell did I get this one?
Who are you cheating on me?
You see?
With.
You see?
Let me find
We're back
her.
To the old intro.
That is not good.
What did I do?
Subliminal okay. messages?
Yeah, something like that, you see? Yeah, let me bring up my right screen here. I don't know why this happened.
What in the hell is going on here, Sam?
I don't know, my dear. Let's see.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the Morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
And here's your airhead host. Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, March 9th. And we're back in the studio live after we weren't here Friday or Monday.
Losers.
That kind of sucks.
Yeah, my bad.
You know, when we don't show up, people let me know about it.
Do they really?
Yeah, they
what
send
they
emails and everything, you know.
Seriously?
Yeah, they do. They do. So
What do they say?
We have responsibility to our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
So yesterday was my fault. Friday was your fault. Or how did it work?
Yeah. Well, it's not about fault, you know. I mean,
but it's so much more fun that way. Keeping score. Who's
you want to do that?
No, not
Let's
really.
Do that.
No, not really. That's not my school of thought, actually.
So we're 1-1.
No, I don't like doing that, actually.
No.
I don't like...
Because you know you lose, or what?
Whatever. No, I'll find a way to manipulate the points to win. I'll find a way to cheat my own game to win. Yeah. No, I just feel like even just the way that just the way of living like that, where people like to keep records of right and wrong. I mean, we all done it. We all do it. It's part of human nature. But mm-hmm. I think living that way takes away grace. It takes away just breathing room with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's tit for tat. You did this, I do this.
And exactly.
It's not joyful.
Know? Yeah.
It's not joyful.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it depends what it is. I mean, if someone really screws you, you know, it's like you got to do something.
Yeah.
Know,
you got to.
You've got to.
You know, here's a funny story. I'm telling another friend's story. Hopefully they're listening.
Hey, weren't you going to bring someone in today?
They got sick.
Oh, they got sick.
Yeah,
okay.
They got sick. So I got that last minute cancellation from them, which is, you know, it's fine. We're going to have some good guests on, though. I've got a great lineup of people. I want to run by you. Some awesome comedians that have been seen on TV and just some really great comics. One girl's name is Melinda Hill.
Mm-hmm.
She runs a couple shows out in LA that are wonderful shows. Mm-hmm. And not just her, but like her, the people she books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool because we'll have her on later, but she really kind of, not just her, but the collaborative effect that she does with these shows. It's just kind of refreshing to go to different shows in LA that aren't your basic comedy show at the same place you've been all the time with the same comics. It's kind of got a little more of an alternative feel with just a lot of variety. So she'll be on another time to kind of talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the whole tit for tat thing. So I have really close friends that are now married and just had a baby. But when she was pregnant and they were not, they hadn't had their baby yet, they had a parking spot at their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband came home and he was pissed because somebody had parked in their spot. And this has been going on. It's one of those things that's been going on. And he had had it. And she's pregnant, he's angry, and it's hot and late at night and hungry or whatever, you know, the situation is. So they walk up to the door, and they see a little bag tied up.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at him, she goes, you know what that is, right? He looks at her, she goes, do it. She just gave him the okay, do it.
Uh-huh.
It was leftover dog crap that they were going to throw away.
Uh-huh.
So he takes this bag, he goes out to the car.
Uh-huh.
And he just smears the dog shit all over this car that's parked in their spot. He even took it and underneath the handle.
Uh-huh. That's disgusting.
It's disgusting. Well, they laughed so hard and they were like, Kara, it felt so good. It was so wrong, but it felt so good. And she goes, and we're going to be parents. Can you believe it? We're going to be parents.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Then
well,
they'll have baby shit to smear all over
the gosh.
Car.
Well, you know, what happened is the next day, somebody had taken like the leftovers and put it on their car.
Really? Yeah.
And they were fine with it. They were like, yeah, we deserve it.
Yeah,
we
they do.
Well, it's funny because they were upset. They went after them, but they it wasn't right, and they knew it wasn't right, but they indulged in that desire to just get revenge.
Yeah, I know.
But then they kind of let it go, and then they got their car was creamed with crap, and they were able to just go, you know what? We had it coming.
Exactly. You don't do something that the other side can do too, you know?
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's...
You gotta be a little more ballsy than that.
Yeah, I think the thing with revenge and just getting everybody back is that it's constantly... Well, one, I don't think it ever ends.
Mm.
And two, I think it kind of... It just takes a room in your heart and in your mind where you're, like, irritated and angry.
Yeah,
it's like, really, who wants to spend their time like that?
Yeah.
You know?
Nobody's worth it, really.
No, and it's like poison. I think it's poison.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Have you ever gotten revenge on anybody?
Probably, but I don't keep track of these things because I don't.
It sounds like you're not a revenge kind of guy.
No. Well, I would, but thankfully, not many people screwed me in my life, you know?
Mm.
But when they do, yeah, fuck them, you know?
You're funny, Sam. You just really, you have like, you look like you're just this really, for you guys listening, can't see Sam. He's just like laid back. He's on everybody's side. He's just a really cool, nice dude. So when he's
everybody's
like,
side.
I just feel no. Listen, I think you're a fan of people. Like you really build people up, and you know you're just like you're very open. If you're not into poetry, you're like, I don't really get it, but good for you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're just
I'm
very
open.
Open. You're
that.
Very
yeah.
open. So it's funny when you're like, fuck him.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
Fuck him.
I think it's funny, but that's not really your style.
Yeah. Well, you don't know me.
I got to cross you first.
You see, I'm totally not a laid-back person, you know, and people do think that because it humbles me that I have the radio station and everything, and I deal with a lot of people, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to be patient, you know. I have to be, and when you enjoy it, it's not an effort.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I enjoy people, yeah. But,
well, that's what they say.
But when I don't know people and they're on the street or on the road, they irritate me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If there's, like, too many people anywhere, I get, like, really nervous.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
It's just because I get very impatient, you know.
Oh.
It's like if I see a line, it's like I break out in hives and shit, you know. I mean,
that's funny.
Yeah.
Hardest thing everyone's ever had to do is wait, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I hate waiting.
It's weird. It's very interesting because everybody hates waiting.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's kind of an entitled attitude, like, what? We have to wait? I went to the DMV, one of my many trips there, and you know, I had an appointment. And you schedule an appointment, you bypass the line, you go straight up to another line just to get a ticket and to sit there and wait for your number. Now, I didn't have to wait 3 hours, but I did have to wait about, I don't know, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's the point of an appointment if I'm still waiting 45 minutes? But you know what? I was like, well, it's not going
to
kill me.
But exactly. Plus, you go to the DMV, you expect that, you know. So, you know, it's not like you're surprised and shocked and then you get irritated about it. Yeah, you know, when I go to the DMV or any government office, I figure, it's going to take a while, you know, so I can't really get irritated. But sometimes I'll go, like, I remember I went to one government building, and I go in, and there's a line of, like, 50 people. And I thought, what time am I ever going to get to the front of the line? You know, and I just turned around and left, you know. There's just no way. There's no way. I mean, I don't know how you can make me stand in a line like that.
So you were like, screw it.
Yeah, screw it, you know.
Done.
Yeah.
But having kids, doesn't that stretch your patience a lot? And like.
It did, but not anymore.
with kids, was it difficult?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure.
Look, especially when it's your kids, yes, you get very patient, you know. But it doesn't change the fact that, you know, people can really irritate. You know, and they do.
They can really irritate. They need to step off.
So tell me something. How was your weekend?
Oh, my gosh. Well, yesterday I had a really crazy car fiasco. But we don't need to talk about that because that stuff's never fun. But everything's fine. Up and running good. So last night. So I think I got to talk about God for a second because I love God. Even when I get pissed.
I'm always open to talking about God.
Well, here's the thing. Yesterday was rough. The morning time was rough. It was rough. Let's just put it that way. And I was just sitting there going, I need things to lift. I need things to ease up here. I'm getting a little wore out. I'm getting a little over this. I'm over it. You know that feeling?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're trudging through. You're pushing along. You're having faith. But it just seems like if it's not one thing, it's another thing, right?
Right.
And I'm just like, but, you know, you never really know when things are going to go away or get better. I mean, you're doing your best, but you never really know when the season's going to change. And it's like, it requires faith to like still have a good attitude, to still thank God, even when things feel like a little slim or a little bit hard, you know?
Right.
But then I've always, and God is so good because this has happened to me several times where I will have something that's just like, I don't want to say devastating because it's not devastating, but I'll have like some really setbacks just thrown my way or something like that, or something that is just my fault that I should take care of. I'm not saying I'm all victim in all this, but I'm just saying some stuff happens and you're like, oh my gosh, I really can't deal with this right now. And it's overwhelming and you just want to throw the towel in. The same day that always happens, there's something great that happens the same day too. So yesterday I'm having car troubles. We had to cancel the show, da da da. And I'm just like, oh, and I've been struggling with this. And then that evening, I get to go to the premiere of a new television show that's coming out on FX called Justified. And we went to the theater. We got to see it at the Directors Guild. And then we went to the Falcon. And I got in free. And I had 3 drinks for free. And then they had this great spread of great, great food. Mm-hmm. And I had tons of great food. Mm-hmm. And they walked around with, like, desserts. Like, they had, like, ice cream cones on this plate that were, like, stuck in, like, frozen ice. It was so cool. Yeah. And then all the actors were there.
How'd you wind up at that party?
Well, Sam, I don't know if you know this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
You're well connected.
No, I mean, actually, yeah. No, I stumbled across it, but a friend of mine, she is works for FX.
I see.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, no, it was really cool.
You got to eat a lot?
Totally did. But it wasn't just about eating. It was just like great people, had a fun time. The ambiance was great. But I just love that contrast of having like one of those days you're like, and then at the end of the day. That's happened to me several times. So I'm sending a shout out to G-O-D.
Yeah.
I'm going to send a shout out to my Heavenly Father because I'm grateful for when things look hard and then boom. I just feel like he balances burdens and blessings.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think God really has the time to sit there and deal with your day? Don't you
he shuts the whole world off for me, Sam. I'm his favorite. Don't you know that? No, of course not.
You can attribute everything to God, but the thing is, you got to take some credit too.
Listen. Here's the thing. Here's what I'm saying.
Okay.
God isn't constrained to, hey guys, I'm really busy. Can you hang out? I'll get to you in a second. Hey guys, I'm dealing with these people. I'll get to you later. Just play around in the field for a bit. No, God is everywhere.
Right.
He's everywhere at the same time. And it is a mystery how as big as God can be with like the solar system and the universe and to as small as God can be like with plants and photosynthesis and how their little veins take light and make it into food for themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, God is as big and corporate as he is personalized. Mm-hmm. And it's a mystery how mm-hmm. he knows, as the Bible says, he knows the number of hairs on your head. He mm-hmm. knows you by name. He knit you in your mother's womb. God loves us so much, and it's not about giving me everything I want or, you know, always bailing me out, but I find that whatever the circumstances, even if it looks bleak, I know that God's still in it, and then he shows up later, and it doesn't mean it has to be a party, it's just lifting is the point. I mean, for me, it was just really fun to get to be with friends and enjoy a good night after just having a really kind of crazy, crazy morning and afternoon.
Right. Now, what about, you know, choosing like a spiritual path for yourself? And without God's intervention, I mean, you don't think that happens? In other words, the soul comes here, and it's got its own journey to take.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. Whatever happens, the consequences are built in. You know, it just depends on what you choose to do. You know, you come to a fork on the road.
Yeah.
You come to a fork on the road. You choose which road to take, but the consequences are built in already. So what I'm saying is, you know, I don't think this has to do with God. I mean, obviously everything has to do with God. But when you have a day when things don't go well and then they go well and stuff, I don't think God has anything to do with it. come on, you know?
No, I totally disagree.
Okay, that's fine.
No, here's what I want to say. Yeah, well, that's what we do here. I understand what you're saying. I'm not trying to – hear me out. I don't want to be misunderstood as over-spiritualizing everything. Like, mm-hmm. oh, my gosh, everything's so super spiritual, and God loves me because he did this, this, and this, and I got 5 stamps for free at the post office. God loves me more. You know, mm-hmm. I don't believe that. But what I do believe is I believe that God is multi-purposed. He's everywhere at the same time, and – I think ultimately God does want us to have a personal relationship with him where he is in the day-to-day workings. That doesn't mean he's always sitting up there as a genie in a bottle just blessing us on every little thing or, mm-hmm. you know, or throwing lightning bolts. It just means that there's relationship in the day-to-day. And I think the more that we seek God and we look for him and our hearts open, you just start to see him everywhere working in the smallest to the biggest ways. And I know it's not like something everybody thinks that way, but I mean, that's what I believe. And going back to your question about, you know, can a soul just travel here and built in consequences and choice? And then you said, you know, without God, and then you're like, but you know, of course God is everywhere. I think what I have to say, and it's going to sound harsh, but it's just, that's what I believe in the sense of like, I just think it's arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
It's arrogance to think that you're just created without a creator. You just exist without anybody, any intelligent design, whether you want to call it God or not. And you're here. You don't know how you were made.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You had no control over the day that you were brought into existence.
Right.
And you don't even know the day you're going to die.
Right.
You didn't make a tree. You didn't put the stars in the sky. You didn't tell the ocean how far it can go in and then the gravity, the magnetic, everything, the solar system to pull it back and not swallow up the land.
Right.
Like, there's just so much that's so bigger than us.
Yeah.
And whether or not people want to call that God or not, I think it's just denial to say there's no higher power. There's no intelligent design.
But who said that? Nobody said
there's
no higher
power. A lot of people do.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about me or something.
No, a lot of people do. And it kind of sounds like what you're saying is like, oh, you just come into this world, you make choices, and excluding God, how do you exclude God?
No, you don't exclude God.
So
that's what I'm saying. But I don't think you think that he gave us enough credit or you don't give us enough credit for the choices that he has allowed us to make.
What do you mean?
You know, what I mean is that whatever happens to you during the day has little to do with what God has for you. I think it's just that it's built into your life picture. You know, in other words, that's the path you chose to take. So these are the things that are going to happen to you. Those are the consequences.
Well,
you know?
I'm not arguing like cause and effect or consequences. This isn't about evading responsibility, because I agree with you. Like, God gives us choice, and then he lets us choose.
Exactly.
And there are natural...
But the consequences are built in already. In other words, you can choose whether to stick your finger in the socket or not, but if you do, there's a built-in consequence.
But what does that have to do? Because I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
Right.
But what does that have to do with negating the fact that God is in all that with you and then provides, you know, joy in the other part of your day?
Yeah.
You just don't believe that.
Because I believe that, again, the path is, let's say as a soul that's about to come back, you decide the path you're going to take. Okay? And God gives you the framework in which to operate, but I don't think he intervenes.
Ever.
I don't think he intervenes.
So he's just, where is God
people.
Then?
I'm sorry?
Where is he?
Everywhere.
Okay.
But doesn't mean he has to intervene.
No, he doesn't have to do anything.
Let's say he built a machine and now he's watching it work.
Okay.
You know? And the thing is that if, and, you know, you can't prove otherwise, because although everything is a miracle out there, at the same time, there are laws of physics that don't get violated.
There's a lot of things that have happened that there's a lot of natural wonders that we can't explain scientifically.
Absolutely.
But that what I'm trying to say is...
It's already been started as far as we're concerned, you know? It was already here. It happened, let's say, before we ever existed.
Yeah.
And now we're here, and this is the framework we have. This is the Earth we have to deal with and to live with.
Mm-hmm.
But the choices are ours.
Well, nobody's taking away your choice, Sam.
Right.
And
do you think God intervened in the Holocaust?
Who knows? I think maybe in some ways, yeah.
In which way?
Well, there's a lot of personal stories of people that were spared for some reasons. They were able to escape, or people that were able to survive, or stories of people giving their lives to save other people. It's just like in 9/11.
Well, but that's because it's never 100% of something.
No, I mean, there's just different ways to look at where God's moving. Does that mean that there's no suffering? Does that mean that God intervenes all the time in the big ways? Or maybe is he working in small ways all over the place in people's hearts and minds and in relationships? And I think that if to say God is everywhere but he never intervenes, I just don't believe that. I can't even believe that. But I don't mean intervene as like take away Sam's choice or intervene or make you do something. I don't think it's like that. But I guess what I want to just to kind of broaden the conversation is, like, for example, love is, the Bible says, it's kind. It doesn't boast. It doesn't keep record of right or wrong, which is funny. We're just talking about that. It's patient. It is kind. It's gentle. Love, pretty much has no bounds. It's pure.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us, in all of our imperfections, we experience love. Like with your kids, you have a certain kind of love for your children. Mm-hmm. That's probably unexplainable.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to, but there's a certain kind of love you have for your daughter and your son that is just there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so bonding and it's so intense. I think that love comes from somewhere. It comes because God is love.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that kind of love for us.
But God is everything, not just love, but hate too.
Oh, see, I don't think that. Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, I don't think that.
But
no.
He created it.
Well, it's
he
up for debate.
Hate.
You can't prove it, but you can argue it.
But if God is...
Sam's getting heated.
No, but if God is everything...
But hey,
God
people,
is everything.
Listen, a lot of people may agree with you.
Okay.
I've told you before.
I mean, just based on logic.
Well, here's the thing, and I've used this, you know, the actual definition of cold, there's no cold. Did you know that? There's no definition of cold. The actual closest definition we have is certain amount of degrees absent of heat, lack of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So energy is the substance. Energy is the thing, the noun.
Right.
It is the actual physical, and you know, it is the real thing.
Right.
And the lack of energy is the byproduct, which really isn't a product. It's just void. It's nothing. It's called cold. There's no energy. There's no movement. There's no life there.
Right.
So God is love.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all experienced God's love because he's everywhere, and to different levels and degrees. But stepping outside of God, mm-hmm. it doesn't exist in right. and of itself. It does. It's void. It's like cold. There's nothing there.
Right.
So I think hate mm-hmm. is basically inverted love in a way. It's mm-hmm. it's like lack of love, and it in whereas love is about multiplying and spreading and multiplying and multiplying and it moves. Mm-hmm. I feel hate is the complete opposite. It's inward, 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 inward.
Right. But what I'm saying is, it was something that also was created by God. You know, it's something that, again, if God is everything, then God is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't sit there and deny that all these things are happening. I mean, you have natural disasters, uh-huh. you know, which we can't explain. We don't mm-hmm. know why they happen.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it would be arrogant for us to say it's a bad thing or it's a good thing. At
no,
the same
I see
time,
what you're saying.
Those things are God as well, mm-hmm. you know. And when
but
someone
are those
loses,
really hate? Are those?
No, that's not hate. But I'm just talking about the negative side of things.
Yeah, no.
That those are part of God as well, you mm-hmm. know, and you have to accept that, I think. Anyway, enough about God for another day. I mean, I love talking about this stuff. Don't get me wrong, you know. But, you know, it's like I'm a big believer in God, mm-hmm. okay? But I don't believe in blind faith, and I don't believe in religion. I believe in my relationship with God, and not in a way that people have decided for me how to practice.
Well, I respect that. And yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't believe in religion either. Mm. And
Well, you bring up the Bible all the time.
Well, the Bible is not a religious thing.
Why? I
mean, religion is systematic order that's made by man to
exactly.
To
what
oppress.
Is the, what is the Bible?
I believe it's the inspired word of God.
Okay, so but it's a given that many people have
the way you use
things,
it, the
you
way
know?
You use it. Like I believe in Christian spirituality.
Like the Gospels, right? Those were written by people, right?
Well, I mean, physically, yes.
The New Testament.
Yeah. Well,
was
physically,
by
the
people.
Whole Bible. So was the Torah. Physically, okay. physically, the Torah was
right.
written by.
By
man.
People.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, exactly. I look at it like I think God's spirit transcends human error. And I do believe that those are the life breathed messages of God. And I also do believe that, you know, the way that it's used mm-hmm. in people to oppress people, to manipulate them, to put fear into them, mm-hmm. that's religion to me.
Right. And
I mean,
the Bible.
Well, that's really not the heart of the Bible.
The heart of the Bible. Okay, you know what? Let's go back to this because we got to call the author.
Okay.
But no, put there's a lot of things I want to say
sure,
about that. You know,
sure.
Because the Bible is full of murder and
yeah, it's real
you know,
people.
Every possible sin.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. And so at any rate, we're going to be calling our author for today. His name is Keith Thompson, and he wrote a novel. This is actually a novel called Once a Spy. And I started reading this, and it was pretty cool. You know, I like spy things and thrillers and everything, so I found that to be pretty fascinating. Remember, we were talking about the bricklayer the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, too. I'm still reading that book, by the way. Yeah.
Hello?
Good morning. Keith Thompson?
Hey.
Yes, good morning to you. This is Sam and Kara calling you
Hello.
From L.A.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Well, thanks.
What part of the country are we calling you?
I'm in Alabama. Are we live on the air?
Yes, we're live on the air.
Yep.
Are you okay with that?
How about that? I guess I better be.
Yeah.
Smile for the camera.
there is a camera on my computer.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we'd rather not.
I just did smile for it reflectively.
There you go.
Yeah, but we'd rather not be seen. You know, we have faces for radio here, so we stay behind
thanks,
the mic.
Oh, thanks, Sam. I think I've got a TV face.
I look a lot better on radio too.
Keith, I started reading your book Once a Spy. This is a novel that you wrote. And how long did it take you to write a novel like this?
It's a difficult question to answer. I largely because I had two children while writing it. I think that if you were to sort of subtract de facto paternity leaves and a couple of other things, plus an MTV project here and there, it'd be about 2.5 years.
Right, 2.5 years. Wow, that's a long time. I mean, you really have to have. To be pretty persistent to continue with this. I don't know that I could do something like this, for 2.5 years, but kudos to you. Now, the book is, your main idea, I guess, from what I took from this is what happens when a CIA agent or was it FBI? I don't remember. But let's say a secret
he's
agent.
He's a member of the CIA's clandestine service. He's right. An operations officer, which is in common parlance a secret agent.
Right, exactly. You see, I've been reading so many spy novels that I don't even remember CIA or FBI anymore.
That's funny.
FBI is domestic, CIA is abroad. At least that's what they're supposed to do.
Right, exactly. So tell us a little bit about the book itself, the plot. What's going on there?
Well, Once a Spy is, the main character is a 30-year-old professional horse player named Charlie Clark. And he decides to institutionalize his father, Drummond, because Drummond is suffering from Alzheimer's disease in a big way. And as Charlie tries to get Drummond to a nursing home, very strange things start happening. Principally, people start trying to kill Charlie and Drummond. Charlie initially thinks that it's the loan sharks that he owes money to at the track, but it turns out that his father, whom he knew only as a dull, workaday appliance salesman, was really once a spy. And his father has information in his head that his former colleagues don't want getting out.
Right.
And the rest of the book from that point is basically a 330-page chase scene.
Yeah.
And awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This is cool. Now, the whole story behind the idea is pretty interesting. I mean, you sent us a whole thing about how you came up with the idea. Tell us a little bit about that. You say, why I based my book on my ex's ex's father, whom I know almost nothing about.
Well, there are a couple of things. One is that I was dating a woman a long time ago, and before me she had gone out with a guy who had grown up all around Europe. His dad was a factory manager, an upper management guy for a company like IBM in their factories, and the dad was a sort of a staunch, you know, Archie Bunker type xenophobe. He would go out of his way to avoid speaking the language and sort of eschew the culture and, you know, make fun of the locals, you know, always refer to the French as frogs, you know, that kind of guy.
Right.
And when my old girlfriend went down to their house for Thanksgiving, this dad was in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease, and everybody was shocked at the Thanksgiving table when he started speaking French fluently, and he looked around the table and saw the looks of mystification on all the faces, so he just switched over to German fluently, and it turned out that, you know, Archie Bunker guy and xenophobe and factory manager were just cover, and that in all likelihood he was a covert operations officer, a member of the clandestine service in some capacity. And
wow.
That's what gave me the basic idea for my book. I mean, I was curious what happens when a covert operations officer loses his ability to retain secrets. You know, what's the protocol? And
wow.
At the same exact time, William Colby, who had been the director of the CIA, went out for a canoe trip. He was 73 or so at the time, and I would need to check that, but within a couple of years. And at his house in Maryland, he was still very active in intelligence, and he went out on a canoe trip and disappeared. They didn't find him for a week.
Right.
And, you know, he was a guy with a lot of secrets in his head, and he had died, report concluded, of evidently he suffered a stroke or a heart attack, fell out of his canoe, and then died of hypothermia or drowning. But conspiracy theories abounded, and it's one of those things where it built up in my consciousness. I just was really curious what would happen, and that's sort of the hypothetical that Once a Spy tries to answer.
Right. Now, you don't really have background in secret operations and stuff, CIA workings. How did you find out? I mean, this had to involve a lot of research.
Well, I was in the CIA. I was there for a reception one night in December of 2008. And the reason I was there was in my capacity as a national security columnist. I write a lot on that topic for the Huffington Post and on intelligence matters. And in the course of doing that, I've learned quite a bit. I've come in contact with a wide range of people in the intelligence community, from a guy who is a temp at the National Security Agency to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, General Mike Hayden, right, with whom I had a beer the night that I was at the CIA in December of 2008.
Mm-hmm. I see. And so that was your source for the research?
Books, open sources, people who'd worked in the field, the gamut.
Yeah.
So what does happen to, not necessarily the character, you don't have to reveal that, but I mean, your friend's father that went kind of AWOL and started speaking 20 different languages, I mean, what do they do with, what happens?
Well, my friends, the father, I don't know, and even if I had used all of my reporter tricks, I doubt I would have been able to find out really anything more than what I've told you about his true occupation. But the reality is that once people are phased out of operations, maybe at the age of 50 or so, by the time their minds start to fail from dementia, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, that sort of affliction, the sources, the people, the agents in other countries whom they obtained information from, and the methods, that being the technology, advance at a head-spinning rate and have changed so much. There's almost a complete roster turnover in secret operatives and assets and technology. So the fact of the matter is that they could pretty much sit down and dictate their memoirs to a member of the Pakistani ISI or the Russian SVR, you know, the new KGB, and it really wouldn't be harmful. And for that reason, the Central Intelligence Agency, to my knowledge, and you know, the other intelligence agencies don't have a set protocol for dealing with agents of that in that condition. But it could happen, and Colby is an example of how it might have happened, and so it makes for a good story, hopefully.
Yeah, cool. Definitely.
Wow.
Well, the book is Once a Spy, and we're talking to Keith Thompson. This book was just released, right?
Today.
Oh, today.
Congratulations.
Well, congratulations to you. And
Thank you.
I'm sure the book is available everywhere there's the books are sold. And again, congratulations to you. Everybody go out and get the book. And you also publish at the Huffington Post, right?
I write for the Huffington Post. I also today finished Twice a Spy, which Random House says imprint Doubleday will release a year from now. Mm-hmm. And onceaspy.com is the website that has all the information that anybody other than my mother would ever want.
Awesome, awesome. And is the next book, is that a sequel?
It is a sequel. It's tentatively called Twice a Spy.
I see.
That's funny. And then like Three a Spy. And like,
if we get to a third book, it'll be in the category of desirable problems. Thrice a Spy probably isn't the best title, but
Thrice.
I hope to be able to figure that one out.
Yeah.
So how is Alabama treating you?
How is Alabama treating me? It's great. There's very good barbecue here, and I have a wonderful family.
Wonderful. Awesome.
Well, you're a very lucky man. Again, congratulations on the book. 2.5 years worth of work, and finally you get to sit back and enjoy it. All the best to you, Keith, and thank you for talking to us this morning.
Bye, Keith.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Well, what can I tell you, man? Anybody that puts 2.5 years into anything gets my salute.
Sam, you know? You're such a good man.
I don't think so. But
he's like, no, I can turn into the Hulk and go tear up a car if it's in my way.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in 943-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
He tried to tell her, and she thought it right. Hand in hand, they marched on through the night. He knew the answers she'd hoped to find.
It'll just take a little time, just a little bit of time. It wasn't easy, but how could they fail? Though love can blind you just like a veil, he knew the price was worth the strain. There was so very much to gain, so much love was there to gain. And they flew so high that they lifted up the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried to make paradise their aim.
Shitty Talk Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
That's cool. I like that you added that. Have you been singing from an early age?
Man, ever since I came out of the womb, I was like, get up off of that thing!
I know. Singing. I love singing, man.
Do you?
Love...
What's your favorite stuff to sing?
It depends. It depends. You know, I like George Michael a lot.
You know, I sing his freaking music. Love George Michael!
Do you? Well, I love him too, and I'm not gay for him or anything, but...
It's okay. It's okay.
It's like you have to put a disclaimer, you know.
Oh my gosh, George Michael. I did a
But no, he's very handsome and he's a great musician.
What's
I think.
One of your favorite George Michael songs?
Careless Whisper.
Careless Whisper.
Yeah, so I sing that one pretty good actually. And
do
it's
you?
High too, yeah. It's a high
you
song.
You sing it good? Where do you sing it?
Well, I used to have a karaoke machine at home.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Secrets of Sam just coming out. I love it.
See? And my guitar, of course. I've played guitar since I was very young.
Is that I Never Want to Dance Again?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a hot song.
That's a hot song. And so he's got a few of other songs that I like. So his stuff and then a lot of rock stuff, you know. I haven't sung in a long time, so I can't really tell you, but I need to start doing karaoke again.
Do you
want
to bust out a little tune real quick for us?
No, not right now. I need, like, the band and stuff. You know?
Really?
I'm not like you. I can't just sing. Because your music is different. You know?
Well, it is different, but I love karaoke.
I need to be, like, in a studio surrounding and stuff, you know. And
yeah, big choir behind you.
Yeah.
Fireworks.
I need to be standing up, too, when I sing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, it's better for breath, for breathing and breath control and stuff like that. But I usually sit down when I play my guitar.
Yeah.
So.
How long have you played the guitar?
Oh my gosh, just a couple years.
Really?
Novice at it. I mean, it's really a blessing. I've worked through it and I've been able to write some great songs through using the guitar.
Right.
But it's time to kind of step up my game and get better at it. But I'm a vocalist first and a singer songwriter and then guitarist. I wouldn't even say I am.
Yeah, the guitarist to back you up and stuff.
It is. And basically it provides me the chord structure. But I've written some. It's been cool for me because just by playing around the guitar, I found chord progressions or some picking and that I've just loved. I'm like, oh my God. And I start hearing the song through that.
Right, right.
So I need to progress in my guitar because I feel like that's what helps me write the song.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But you know what? When you sing, all you need to be concerned is the chords. You know, you don't have to get really complicated into the guitar if you just learn the chords and stuff. And because you're using it to back you up, it's not like you're playing solo guitar or anything.
Yeah, no. I mean, I did the show the other day, and I mean, like, literally my songs are just a few chords.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you're not thinking about that because I'm like, wow, wow, wow,
exactly.
Wow, wow, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why I picked up the guitar at an early age because I wanted to sing.
Oh, I bet you're pretty good. I bet you're pretty good at it then.
Yeah, I am, but... You know, my son now. I mean, my
really
son.
Good?
Oh, man. He plays some solos like I could never even dream of playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Does he want to be in a band
Amazing.
Or anything? Or?
Probably, yeah. But he's not ready for it yet.
No.
But, man, he plays like there's no tomorrow. I can't believe it.
Really?
Yeah. But you know what's neat is I see him so into his guitar now, and it reminds me when I was 16, and my guitar was like, you know, the most important thing to me at the time.
Aw.
Yeah.
It is cool. I mean, I went through that, like, beginning stage of, like, oh, my gosh, this hurts. My fingers hurt. And then, blah, blah, blah. And then you start getting progress. And then it becomes addictive. And you're like, oh, my gosh. And then you're pumping out songs. And you just want to get the guitar. And you want to get alone. And you just want to play and write.
Yeah.
You know?
And when you're young, you know, I think you define yourself by the music and everything. You know, it's a very big part.
It's very influential.
Of a teenager's life.
Yeah. I mean, I've traveled with my guitar and busted it out at airports.
Really?
Waiting for my luggage. Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't
like the people that do that. You know,
well,
sometimes on my street, I'll have like a guy just playing the guitar and singing in the street while he's walking.
Oh, it just pisses you off? You're like, who do you think you are?
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Doesn't piss me off. I think it's kind of cool. It's one thing if like it's in your face, but I think it's like a sign of life, you know. But I have a funny story, man. Because I was always going to this coffee shop a few years back by my house. I'd roll out of bed. This is right when I was really into the guitar at first. And I'd bring my guitar with me to the coffee shop, sit out in the patio.
Uh-huh.
And if there really weren't any people around or very little people, I would work on a couple songs and, you know, it's outside, and L.A. is always gorgeous, so it's like, oh, I'll sit out in here and, you know, do this.
Yeah, but is a coffee shop a place to do it?
I mean, you can go to the park or something. Well, I think that there's coffee at coffee shops, and I wanted some coffee, and as long as it wasn't bothering anybody, I mean...
But you don't know that it doesn't.
Well, I mean, most of the time, there wasn't anybody around, yeah. And then if there were, there was. It's not like I'm wailing. I'm just playing through the chords and stuff, yeah. And it's more...
That's true. It's not really a bad thing.
And but most people are like, oh, I want to hear it. You know, it brings brings community. It's just like having a dog. You, like, walk your dog, and everybody's like, oh, your dog's so cute. You know, and they want to talk to you, and they want to talk about your dog. The guitar can be kind of a conversation piece as well.
Definitely. And people like to listen.
They do.
They really do.
Well, I would wake up. I'd roll out of bed, no makeup, go get my coffee, have my guitar. Mm-hmm. And this lady comes up to me, and I'm kind of outside the area that everybody's sitting. And she's like, hey, here's a coffee. You want it? I said, I already have one. She's like... Okay, well, you can have it. It's just got a little bit of sugar in it. I didn't drink much. And I said, I'm sorry, what? She's like, just take the coffee. And I was like, you think I'm homeless? Really? I said, I know I don't look that great in the morning, but this is a first. I said, no, I'm not homeless. She's like, it's okay, take the coffee. She didn't even believe me. I had to show her my car keys and jingle them. I said, I got a car. She's like, she wanted to, like... I was like, well, damn, if you can't beat them, join them. Yeah. I was like, well, I'm going to pick up a part-time job in the mornings then.
There you go.
Put out a little hat.
Yeah.
If they want to give me gifts.
Stand at the freeway exits and make money. I think these guys make a lot of money.
I bet there are some that do.
Yeah.
There's definitely some. I see a lot of really, really, like, addicts out there. Not really. They don't even have enough brain cells right now to do that. Usually it's people that are... strung on a lot of drugs. I see that more where I am. But in the Valley, let me tell you, when I lived over here, one dude came up to me one time. He's like, he had this whole thing. My car just broke down. I just need some money to just get somebody to pick me up. Blah, blah. And he was sweaty, and he looked like a dad that was just hard on his luck and was in a bad bind. You know, so he had that energy and the whole atmosphere set. He was like, hey, you know, great actor.
Yeah.
Gave him a couple bucks, you know. The next day, I show up to the same place, and he comes up to me again. He's like, hey, word for word, same performance. And I said, are you kidding me? He's like, what? I said, you just did this crap to me yesterday, and I gave you money. And he's like, oh, and he just does this shooey thing with his hands, like, whatever. Uh-huh. And he goes to the next person.
Yeah.
He was a salesman.
How do you know?
No, every day he's going to go up to you and be like,
oh, I see.
Yeah,
that's
no,
what
he
you
was
mean. Yeah.
He was panhandling and giving everybody this idea that he was in his car was broken down.
Yeah.
But he does it every
and
day.
That's such an old trick in the book, you know. I mean, they all do that.
When you first move here, though, like in Texas, I mean, where I was living, there weren't homeless people.
Yeah.
Or if they were there, you didn't see them, unless you're maybe in Houston. But
yeah,
I never saw homeless people. I never saw people never came up to me asking for money or anything like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it depends on where you hang out. You know, if you go downtown, there's a lot of beggars there. You know, a lot of homeless people.
Yeah. But it was just interesting, the scams when I came out here.
Yeah. Yeah, people will do anything for money, man. You know?
It's kind of crazy. It is. It's a culture shock, man.
Yeah. Did you get to watch the Oscars at all?
I did.
You did?
I did watch it.
Wow.
What did you think?
I watched parts of it. You know, I couldn't really sit there for 3-4 hours.
Was a little excessive.
Yeah.
I missed the very first part.
Yeah. So I'm usually like not that into it, but I just watched parts of it. You know, so.
And
I have
what did
something
you think?
To talk about. And my favorite was that supporting actor from Inglorious Bastards. His name is Christoph Waltz, I believe.
Yes.
And did you see the movie?
I did, and it was a great performance.
And don't you think, I mean, it's like when I saw that movie, and usually I don't pay attention to how people act and stuff, you know, how they perform.
Yeah.
But this guy was just like, just sleeping out of the screen, you know? That's how great he was.
He gave me the chills. I mean, as soon as he stepped on, and remember he stepped in and he was telling them the story of the rat?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, the rats, they go here. And I was just like, oh. I mean, that first scene was so... made your heart pound out of your chest.
Yeah.
And he was so, like, he played the part exquisite. I mean, it was very scary.
Yeah, you know?
He was kind of like a good villain, like, in the sense of he was he had such finesse about it, mm-hmm. yet he was a monster.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And he always pretended like he was this nice guy and like...
Which is even scarier.
Like he's naive.
You never
yeah.
know when he's going to like jump out and kill you or have somebody kill you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And all the languages he was speaking fluently, you mm-hmm. know, German and French and yeah. Italian.
Yeah.
You know, and English.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he got the award. I knew he would for that one. I mean, I was like, if there was one award I was certain about, it was him, you know.
Yeah.
And, but the movie in general did not get a lot.
It didn't. I think most people would say, wow, that was a great piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
I think people resonate with movies on many different levels. And mm-hmm. I think Inglourious Basterds was very, very unique as Quentin Tarantino. Everything's so unique and it's so him and it's right. just so, and it's so well crafted.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the element of, did it touch me? Did it move me? Did it inspire me? Did it,
right.
you know, I mean, that's just a part of the human experience and people
right.
want to resonate.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't really say that, I mean, it was inspiring, but in a different way.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. It's more for entertainment. I don't think it was about inspiring. Anything,
well, I mean,
you know?
It inspires in a sense of like, the art is inspiring, you mm. know, like as you're watching it and you're like, wow, like the acting and the even like the little brigade of Brad right. Pitt and all the like crazy Nazi killers. I mean,
right.
that was a great comedic offset, yet it was intense. The movie was just, it took so many different kind of turns.
Yeah.
And,
but it is good movie making. You know?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
If it was up to me, I would give it to that.
The best picture?
Yeah.
Over The Hurt Locker and Avatar?
I've never seen The Hurt Locker. It, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Really? Is it out? Because I thought it was out only limited distribution or something.
No, it was out a while ago, and now you can get it on DVD.
Already?
I believe so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then I'm going to watch it.
Oh, it's a great film.
I mean,
film.
It looks pretty good, yeah.
Well, the thing about The Hurt Locker, it just takes you on a different... The lead character is so fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that Kathryn Bigelow deserved the best direction because I thought that it was really
yeah,
well directed.
An excellent movie.
It's a good movie. But it's an interesting movie. It's an interesting take on one person's experience over there.
Right.
And I don't feel like it's like, oh, not another war movie. It doesn't feel like that.
Right.
It doesn't feel
right.
like that. It feels like it's an interesting perspective on this guy and his career over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so somber. It's just really interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of got me thinking because some of the themes in the movie, and one of the themes with the character is just kind of like, this is what the guy's made to do.
Mm-hmm.
He is made to detonate bombs,
right.
or to deactivate them, or whatever the word is, you know.
Right.
And he's superior at it.
Mm.
And when everyone around him is scared and is afraid of dying, he just doesn't really have that kind of fear.
Mm.
Not that he doesn't have any fear, but that's not for him. It's very clear that there's a great need for what he does.
Right.
He's excellent at what he does, and this is what he wants. This is pretty much what he wants to be married to.
Mm.
And there's something to be said for that. It's not everybody feels that way about anything in their life,
mm-hmm.
you know, where this is
yeah.
the thing I'm supposed to do and I want to do it regardless if that means losing a family,
yeah.
not being a mom or dad, the comforts of life. You're like, I'm doing this because this is what I'm made to do.
Right. Right.
And so it's an interesting twist on like a war kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to see it for sure.
Did you see Precious?
No, I didn't see. You see, I haven't seen so many movies that I just haven't been to the movies in a long time, and I miss it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to catch up on some movies on DVD, but, you know, I don't know. You know what? Precious didn't really interest me, but when I started seeing some scenes from it during
yeah.
the Oscars,
yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, there's some good acting there.
I got
know?
To tell you, the movie is, it's a hard movie to watch because it's about some of the most sad things that happen to children, you know.
Right.
But the performance that Monique gave,
mm-hmm.
the supporting actress who she won, I had to say, I sat back that night and I looked at all the best actress performances, the best actor performances that were nominated, all the different supporting roles, and et cetera, et cetera. And I had to say, her performance as supporting actress
uh-huh.
was probably the most, for me, and I think a lot of people would agree, the most impactful performance across all the different categories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like, oh, well, okay, Julia and Julia with Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep's Meryl Streep. I mean, everything right. she touches is wonderful, and she's technically sound, and she's moving, she's passionate, she's amazing. But, I mean, those performances, even though they may be more, they're a lot more, I don't know, more work or different kind of work was put into them, they didn't have the same impact on me right. as the performance that and the character that she played. And right. I think that has a lot to do with it, too, because it's, you know, even The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock, who I thought was a great win. It was a fun story. And, you know, I'm glad that she won. But even in her performance was great and the story was great. It's like Monique's performance in this character mm-hmm. was one of those kind of golden performances where you're like, wow, they're really driving something home here. It's really impactful.
Yeah.
And it's accessible at the same time. It's not too too
artistic. Well, it's a much heavier movie than Julie and Julia, you know. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean as a viewer, and then, you know, I look back and go, okay, well, what really did I take from these movies? Like, would I want to see this movie again, or what are good conversation pieces I have after the movie? I kind of look at that as being part of what I decide in my own, you know, opinion of what I think of as really good.
Right.
And I just kind of felt like that performance was good. However, I do have to say something about Monique.
Uh-huh.
As much as I love the girl and I love Monique,
uh-huh.
her acceptance speech and all of her press leading up to the Oscars and the Globes, it's just, even at the Golden Globes, it's just, she's just buying a little too much into the hype.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like her speeches are a little affected. Mm-hmm. They're a little too over earnest. It's like, oh, well, I just want to think. Oh, and it's just so intense. And I get it because it is intense, but I just feel like she's kind of like, sometimes people expect you to be a certain way and you play into it a little too much.
Yeah.
And I just started feeling
you
like...
You think she's full of herself?
I don't know if she's full of herself. I think she's just a little bit too trying to rape people's emotion a little too bit. Maybe rape is a strong word.
But I think the biggest story was, did you watch the Barbara Walters after that?
Yeah, I watched a little bit.
With her hairy legs. With Monique's hairy legs.
What was her reason for that again?
That I guess she gets like abrasions and stuff on her skin or something. You know, I didn't hear that sentence.
Oh, and she was just
amazed when they did a close-up on her legs.
She was like, hell.
I couldn't believe it.
Hell no.
Yeah, she just said something like, I tried to shave once, and it didn't work or something.
Try it again.
Yeah, I mean...
Try it again.
And besides, what about waxing and all that other stuff, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I mean,
laser.
Girls got money, so I'd wax.
Yeah.
If I had money, oh my gosh, the beauty treatments I would have. Sam, I do a great job without a lot of cash, but I'm telling you won't even recognize me when I have money.
Really?
Well, I'm not going to get surgery, but I mean, I would get laser hair removal. I'd do waxing. Mm. I'd have my hair done. It would look really good.
Yeah, you don't seem that hairy to me. Why?
No, I'm not hairy, but I'm just saying if you can get your legs waxed,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it makes your skin soft.
Right.
And you don't have to shave that frequently.
Right,
so
right.
like whereas you shave a few times a week or like every other day, depending on how smooth you want your legs, you know, you get that stubble feeling.
Exactly.
If you wax, you wouldn't have to shave for maybe a few weeks.
Right. Right.
Isn't that awesome? And then it's not stubbling, it feels soft.
Right. Exactly.
Come on now.
I prefer waxing.
I'd like dip me in wax. Shit, let's do it.
Exactly.
Rip it out, soften me up.
Yeah.
I'd get my armpits waxed.
Lasered.
Yeah.
Hair get removal.
That. Yeah, I also have, this is really gross, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Yeah.
okay.
If it's about your pubes, I'm listening.
No, it's not about that. It's I hate the word pubes. They sound so like gross. Even the word sounds nasty, doesn't it? Pubes.
Okay, what about pubic hair?
Basically the same thing. Okay, you see my birthmark right here?
Yes.
Okay. I have a birthmark for you guys aren't listening.
On your arm.
On my right arm. And I've had it since I was born. It's proof I've been born. That's what I say to people. It's
right.
my stamp of approval.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this freaking birthmark, and all my friends know this, and I'm just going to put it out there because people find out and then they try to give me crap about it. So my birthmark, it grows long, dark. Long, dark
hair. Do we really need
hair.
To know that?
It grows long, dark hair. I'm blonde. I'm not a hairy girl. But then I have this really freaking weird patch that just decides in this dark part of my skin,
uh-huh.
it's going to freaking grow long, dark hair.
Uh-huh.
So ever since I was allowed to use a razor, I started shaving that crap. Like, just shave it. Just shave it, shave it, shave it. The only thing about shaving it is that when it grows back, it starts to grow in, it gets like super prickly.
Exactly.
And it feels like a little buzz cut, like a little crew cut. And I mean, I've been in some of the most embarrassing moments where like I was walking next to a friend and I like, hit this person with my arm, and they're like, ooh, what was that? Something hit my arm. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it was like my patch hit him, because it was like it was like a little bit of a crew cut, so it was like stubbly, and I was like,
yeah.
And especially like if I'm with a guy or something, and it's not like freshly shaven. I'm acting like I'm talking about other stuff, but no, seriously, it's yeah. like I have to always make sure, like every day or every other day, that I shave it so it's just smooth.
Right.
So believe me, when
the tribulations of being a woman, let me tell you,
and having a freaking hair, I call it my chia pet because it just grows back.
Yeah.
But my friends always like, they know it bothers me, so they try to grab my arm and like mm-hmm. rub it real quick,
really?
Sneak a little rub in.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys.
That's cruel.
I was like, you guys are disgusting. They're like, yeah. we like the way it feels. Rub, rub, rub. I'm like, get off my arm. And then they like to like call me out in front of people. Hey, Kara, show me your mark. I'm like, shut up. And I knew this one guy. He called me like, called it like my coffee stain.
Uh-huh.
My shit stain.
Your shit stain.
When I was growing up, because guys are cruel. But he's, you know, he's got a beer belly and he's living in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Me and my birthmark are rocking.
Yeah. That's a pretty big birthmark,
thanks.
Though, huh?
Thanks, Sam.
No, I mean, what? Is that like an insulting thing?
No, actually, people think, well, would you ever get it removed? I wouldn't. I mean,
why would you?
No, it doesn't. I don't think it looks bad. I mean,
it doesn't look bad.
No, I just don't want to have like a forest of like weird, wispy, long hair grown out that just hangs out.
Well, you don't have a choice. That's what nature gave you.
Well, what I do have a choice is when I do make the big money, I will get electrolysis.
I see. Okay.
And get that shit permanently deadened.
Well,
we
better hurry up and find you a rich man.
How about I just make it?
Okay. How long is that going
to
take?
I don't know, but I live by faith. I just believe, you know, do what you're supposed to do. And if it, I mean, that's not really what I'm living for. But, you know, everything's in season and time. And
yeah, so
I'm
you
happy.
Prefer making the money yourself rather than marrying.
No. I mean, I'm really not, other than I do want to have a basic good living, I'm not really money motivated. Mm-hmm. I just want to do the passions and the art and tell stories and jokes and music and make movies. I want to do that and do it in a way that I can, you know, live just doing those things. It's kind of like Sarah said. She was like, you know, a lot of times when the man marries the woman and he's the breadwinner and she's either never worked or hasn't really ever had a career or doesn't you know herself in those ways, there's sometimes a lack of respect. And you know, so that's something that might be nice at first, the whole princess feeling of like, hey, you rescued me from my crazy life in Los Angeles in the Hollywood Hills. Yeah, you rescued me. But no, you know, that would be probably cute for 5 minutes. Right? I mean
not
you're
not necessarily. I don't
you're
know.
A man. Like,
if I met a rich woman, I'd go for it.
No, okay. Would you really? Would you be okay?
Yeah.
If you
who cares who made the money, you know?
As long
what
as
matters is who spends it.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I can spend it just fine.
Well, let me ask you. So let's say, of course, you're in a lovely marriage, but let's say hypothetically you weren't.
Right.
And you met a woman
uh-huh.
who was a waitress.
Right.
And she's barely making it.
Right.
And you thought she was cute or whatever. Is that somebody that she's never gone to college? She's just a waitress, maybe a really cool girl, good personality, and you're attracted to her or whatever. I mean, I know there's a lot of other factors that go into attraction and wanting to commit to somebody.
Yeah.
But I mean, would you see yourself wanting to take her on and like, let me sweep you up?
Sure, of course, yeah. I mean, I don't really care about the money.
Yeah, I don't
But what I'm saying is it would be nice, okay, if you had the choice to marry someone with money rather than without.
Well, I think that's... I don't know anybody that wouldn't agree. Same guy, one with money... One
no,
with
but that. I think people would disagree because some people would prefer to make the money on their own. They don't want to live off of someone else's money.
Well, no. I mean, I kind of look at it like, I'm on my path, mm-hmm. and that's gonna it's gonna happen when it happens, and I'm not waiting for anybody to do it for me or to, you know, pick up the pieces and make it better or whatever. But I mean, if I met the right person and we decided to partner through life and it was still in the stage of my life, you know, well then yeah, he can be the breadwinner, but I'm still gonna work on the things that I want to do, and you know, eventually that will produce the, you know, financial revenue.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't like the idea of, you know, just, and I know people like, you know, just be pretty or whatever and be the arm candy or the trophy, whatever. You land a rich man and then what? Then what?
What do you mean, then what? You just live.
You just live doing what? Getting pedicures, manicures.
Sure.
Go to the spa.
No, you can find things to do. I mean, who says, you know, you have to be creative. You can find a lot of things
to do. But people
do.
Are attracted to people that have passion and purpose. Not none of this bullshit where you're sitting around saying, oh, I'm working on charity. Well, it's not really about charity for you. It's about another social event that you get to be attached to. Like, what about somebody that's like, they're passionate about something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they're like, man, this is what my heart is driven to do.
Yeah, you can do that.
Of course.
You know?
So do you know the rich men? Where are they? Where are they hanging out?
Well, I'm going to find one for you. You might as well.
You're so funny.
Yeah, you have a lot to offer. You
God,
know?
I mean, thanks, Sam.
You might as well find yourself a rich one, you know? I mean, if you have the choice between finding a poor one or a rich one.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you only do it for the money by any means, you know?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is if you have a choice, you know, I mean, if I had, well, I don't know if I can say that, but if there were like two women and I had to pick one, I don't know that I'd do it necessarily for the money, but mm-hmm. It sure would be attractive, would be a factor.
I think that...
I'm shallow. What the fuck?
Are you? I don't think you are.
No, I mean...
Like your wife, was she bringing a lot to the table? Was it something where she was like, hey, I got a big big dowry or whatever?
No, that was not the case. No.
Yeah, and you guys are partners. You guys work together on the radio station. And
yeah,
you
but
know
I wouldn't have minded if she had a lot of money when I met her. I would not have argued.
Well, you know, that's actually, it's probably kind of commendable. I'm going to put kind of commendable because you're secure enough with your manhood where you're like, hey, if you're the breadwinner financially, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's kind of cool that you're, like, secure with yourself to not be intimidated by that.
Yeah, you know.
Some guys are.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah, but some guys, they want to be the ones that are bringing home the bacon. And, you know, it's almost like a weird catch-22. Like, you know, maybe they resent her because she's not making money, but they also want to be the big man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Fuck that shit, okay?
I mean, why
not? All I can say is... what can I say?
Well, I know women that are really successful. It's intimidating for some women.
Yeah, okay. Well, what I wanted to say is, look, if I get to spend the whole day in the spa and sitting with friends and having coffee and stuff, I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Well, I have a really good friend. He's a doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to hook him up with people, and he's like Pandora's box. It's so hard for him to meet the right girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's got a great heart. He's a great person, but we're like brother, sister. We're really, really close. And, you know, whoever he marries, he's going to spoil, and it's going to be, he's financially, they're not going to have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. But he still is like, Kara, I'm not going to marry any woman so she just sit on her ass all day.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, she better freaking work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not because he needs the money. It's like he wants to see his partner, you know, live life and produce and, you know, pioneer ahead and purpose and passion. And I think that I've heard stories of, like, you know, guys marrying the wrong woman, and then she just, it's like, it's not inspiring anymore. It's not about necessity. It's about inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, like, I may not be even attracted to the field, like, of the guy that I may marry, but he may be so into what he does. Or, like, I'll tell you some guys I have some crushes on that are not typically attractive men.
Right.
Okay. One, they're two chefs. One, Gordon Ramsay. Have you seen that man?
Gordon Ramsay, no.
He's got a head that is just huge, and he looks like a crusty old man. And you should actually Google him so you can see what I'm talking about. But he's got shows on the Food Network, and he's a brilliant chef. And he does Hell's Kitchen and...
Gordon what?
Gordon Ramsay.
Okay.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I started watching some of his shows and found myself very attracted to him.
Really?
Because... Well, he is a big, you know, he's really tall. I've actually met him in person one time.
Really?
Before I had a crush on him. I wish I could go back now and re-meet him.
Oh, I see who you're talking
about.
What, he's an actor or a comedian?
No,
what
he's a chef, but he's got a chef.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But no, the thing about him is that when he's in the kitchen and he's talking to these businessmen about helping revamp their restaurant, he's just in his element, and he's so on fire and passionate about the food, and he's kind of a little bit of an a-hole when he talks to guys. Like, he's kind of like, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to just do this? You're going to do, no, it's not going to work. Well, you don't waste my fucking time then. No, right. Like, he's just like, boom, boom, boom. And he's just in his element.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, so turned on watching him.
Really?
Not, like, that's sexually, but I'm attracted to him because right. he's a leader and he's doing what he's so passionate about. And I love cooking, but I'm not, you know, I'm not, like, a chef, and that's never going to be my thing.
Right.
But I love that he's doing that. Another chef that I watch.
You're into the food channel?
I know. I'm into all things food. All things food is Bobby Flay. Do you know Bobby Flay?
No. He just looks
He just looks like an average dude. I think he's married to some chick with kids already. Whatever. But
And he's a chef?
He's a chef, but he's like, he does a lot of the Iron Chef competitions, and he's got shows. And he, again, is somebody that takes charge, is leader, and he's operating in his element, and he's like, it's inspiring to watch. Mm. Not because I'm like, ooh, that's a great recipe, but I'm like, oh, I like how he just takes hold of that kitchen and just, he's telling people into the timing, the ticker's timing, and and he's like, go do this, and I'm like, woo! I like it.
Maybe it's the food part of it. That
I love
you
it
like.
All, but I just like a man that's like, you know, a man that's like a leader and like.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, I think the same is for probably men with women. Like, but I also know men that like that all they want is the sweet woman, sweet wife, to be in the background, make sure that there's food there, and just support his needs.
Right.
And she doesn't really have to go. Not that that's not, that stuff is very, very, very valuable. Mm. And especially, I think a man, that it's very important for him to have that support of a woman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I know guys that are just like, it's all about them. The marriage is all about them. And,
right.
and if she just, she's basically their biggest cheerleader.
Mm.
She's there for everything. She's got supper ready. She's doing the laundry.
I think that usually happens with men that are celebrities, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, like the woman's in the background and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm too much of a diva. I believe in a mutual support of one another. Like, he's my biggest fan. I'm his biggest fan. You know, not just I'm your biggest fan and I'm your biggest fan. Like, that shit isn't going to fly with me. It won't.
Well, because you need attention.
I do. I need a lot of it.
Yeah.
I need a lot of it.
A lot of attention.
I need a lot of attention, Sam. I need so much attention.
All right. We're going to take another break. We'll be back. What the hell am I doing? Hello. This is God speaking. All right. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
Listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Thank you. My name is Rachel, and my telephone number is... I wanted to tell you that you're evil, horrible people. You're awful people. You represent horrible ideas. God hates you, and he wants to kill your children. You should all burn in hell. Bye.
The phone lines are open on Sam and Karen in the morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
So they were talking a lot about Sarah Jessica Parker and the way she looked. Did you see her on the red carpet?
I did see her.
Uh-huh.
And what
she was full of makeup. And, you know.
What did you think?
I thought she looked terrible.
Okay.
But, you know, then again, I don't think she's that pretty. I think she's got a great body and everything, but her face is not that
What
great.
Did you think about... okay, so let's backtrack for a bit. The comments that they were talking about, the way she looked,
right.
What were they saying?
I don't remember. I just know that it sort of reinforced what I remembered.
So they weren't in favor.
I guess people are saying she was full of makeup and that fake tan and everything, you know, and it looked. And then they said nobody should wear yellow to the Oscars.
Oh, they did say that?
Yeah, somebody said that. So, I mean, people always have opinions on that. But I think, you know, it's like... I wonder about this. I mean, she stands in front of the mirror. She obviously sees something different from what we see, you know, because if she felt there was too much makeup, I'm sure she wouldn't have done it.
Well, honestly, I was really torn about the way she looked. It was striking, though.
Mm-hmm.
She was very striking.
Yeah,
she was very, very striking. So in some ways, that was effective. I felt like her hair, if you remember what it looked like, it had these big kind of knots in the back, and then she had some wispy hairs in the front to give it kind of a fun tousled look.
Right.
But I thought that it wasn't executed very well, and I thought that basically this is technical because I used to do hair and makeup and stuff, and I think that the top part of her hair just didn't match. It made her look old.
Really?
I thought that the wispy hairs weren't done in a soft way.
I didn't check her out that closely, but...
Well, I'm a girl. I'm sure, you asked.
Yeah, you look at stuff like
and
that.
And I thought that she's a very petite frame, and... The dress, I feel like those kind of billowy, kind of long dresses look better on people with a lot of height.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of ate up her frame. And I did actually like the color, but I just felt like the color with the metal, metallic, didn't work well.
Metallic stuff.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't think that she looked awful. I just didn't think that it was definitely like either loved it or hated it, kind of.
Yeah, she could have looked better. That's the bottom line, I think.
Yeah.
She could have done a better job on herself.
So you thought that there's just, as you're a man, I mean, you just weren't turned on.
No. I mean, usually I'm not attracted to her. I don't think she's that pretty.
No, she's got kind of some, she's beautiful.
I mean, she's
beautiful.
Got a great body, but, you know, I'm a face person. You know, I like nice faces.
And, yeah, you want to look at the
maybe
face.
Maybe she did the nose job thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think she needs a nose job. I just think she has some features that on her face that are a little bit more masculine. Would you agree?
I don't know. I think the rest of her face is fine if she just straightened out her nose a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, because it's kind of hooky.
Well, you know what? It takes a lot of different people to make the world go around, that's for sure.
That's true.
So who did you like that at the Oscars as far as looks that you were like, wow, they looked really nice?
Yeah, you see, I didn't watch that much of the red carpet at all. I mean, I just caught Sarah Jessica Parker.
And, oh, you did?
Yeah, so...
Or who is some celebrities that you love or as actors that you're like, oh, I think they're beautiful?
You know, who did I think dressed nice? I can't even remember one that I thought dressed nicely. You know, although I'm sure they were. But, but as far as the people that won... You know, the presenters and stuff. I don't remember anything out of the ordinary, you know?
Yeah. I think when I go, I'm probably going to wear...
When you go?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think when I go, I'm probably going to wear red and just do like kind of a 50s glam look with that, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Red, blonde, that whole combo. And then when I go again...
The following year.
Yeah, then I'm going to probably do something with golds.
Uh-huh.
I love gold and kind of like a tangerine apricot, like some of those colors that are real gold rush.
Mm-hmm.
Just really hot and sweaty gold looking. And then when I go again, I'll definitely have to do something black, you know, something chic and black.
Yeah. What I noticed is everybody was wearing black.
Well, everybody wears
it safe. When they show you the audience, everybody was wearing black.
Yeah. Black is so safe, you know?
It is. It is. But it does look good. Mm-hmm. You know.
I've noticed a lot of them are wearing white, and I found out some of the beautiful couture dresses that people were wearing, a lot of them were white and stunning. And apparently one of the new trends for basically evening wear, these ball gowns, are they're going to designers that make wedding dresses.
Yeah.
And they're purchasing getting the wedding dress, and they're just changing the color or something.
Really?
Because those are the more, you know, extravagant looking gowns right now are wedding dresses.
Really?
And I was like, wow, that's so cool. They'll like one, they chopped the bottom off and they made it short, and one, they just changed the color. Mm-hmm. I mean, just really beautiful, you know. So I can't wait, Sam.
Yeah. Did anybody stand out for you there?
I actually thought Cameron Diaz looked the best that she's looked in a long time.
Really?
She looked just, her hair is a little longer. She looked well rested. She's always had really gorgeous eyes and a gorgeous smile.
That's
and,
true,
But sometimes she looks a little bit tired.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron, she actually had on a really beautiful gown that was kind of long and satiny, and then as it got to the top, it was fitted over the breasts. There was just another color that was shaped in like roses. So her boobs looked like roses, and some people were like, "Oh, it takes away from her face." But I'm like, every evening gown is going to take away from your face because it's all extravagant.
Right.
And it was very Marilyn to me.
Uh-huh.
I love that. I thought it was very pretty. And there were Elizabeth Banks. She wore a gray dress, but it was just so beautiful. And it was just, you know, like kind of a straight across the top, fitted. And then right underneath the butt, it kind of like, you know, kind of sprang out and was flowy and really, really pretty.
Yeah.
I did not like Miley Cyrus. She's too young. They're putting clothes on her that just doesn't fit.
How old is she now? 17, 18?
I think she's 17.
Really?
Yeah, I don't really know.
She's been 17 for 5 years already.
No, I think she was 12 for 5 years.
Yeah.
And then they decided to... Yeah. No, I think that you could tell it's like... You could tell when girls or even women are wearing clothing or they're wearing makeup or a hair or something and it's wearing them and they're not wearing it.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't look comfortable. They look insecure.
It overwhelms your look.
Yeah, and they look insecure.
Yeah.
You know, it takes somebody that's really comfortable in who they are to wear certain things and the confidence, and it's a whole package.
Yeah.
And I think Miley Cyrus, is adorable as she is, and I really do think she's a cute girl, the look was a little too sexy early 20s. Not even early 20s. It was even a little bit older than that. It was just a little too, like, you know, hip, young, sexy, and I felt like it just wasn't fitting her. She was slumping over. She looked insecure.
Yeah.
And I was like, isn't somebody like helping this girl out? Like, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, that's how they want to market her, you know?
Ugh.
Yeah. But the things they do to our kids, you know? What can you do?
I know. I mean, one day they're in the Mickey Mouse Club, the next day they're in Maxim.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Amanda Bynes.
I know.
Did you get that photo?
No.
Or did you get that issue? Yeah, I mean, it's like this girl's like Little Miss Nickelodeon or whatever she does, and then she's on freaking Maxim with like a shirt open and bra and panties. And
yeah.
It's just weird. It's like, you know what? Give people time to adjust to the fact that you're maturing and now you want to be like a sex icon. That's great.
Are you talking about the picture she took with her dad and stuff?
No, I'm talking about Amanda Bynes now.
Oh, Amanda Bynes, okay.
Yeah, and
I remember her because when my kids were young, she used to do those shows on
Nickelodeon. Yeah, all those cute shows, and
right.
Then all of a sudden she decides, oh, I'm going in a different direction, which is fine. You know, you mature, you grow up.
Yeah, that's what happens.
That's fine,
to
but do you have to go straight to Maxim?
I mean, look at Dakota Fanning also. She's become like a woman now, you know?
She's getting there. I mean, she's still young, but she's getting there. Yeah, she's beautiful.
I mean, she doesn't look anything like she used to when she was a kid now.
She looks like what is she, like 14 or 15 or something like that?
Wait, now?
Yeah.
No, she's got to be like 18 or more.
Really?
Yeah.
Time-wise.
She's been 14 for about 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that there's this really weird thing. It's like from infancy to porn, it seems like that. Boom. It's like, oh, she's got good genes. Oh, we just, let her ripen up just a bit. Just a little bit more. Just let her barely ripen. Okay, pick her now. Nah, she's not quite ready. That's fine. We'll make up for it. You know, it's like, what was with the Miley Cyrus photo shoot? And then like that with that, what's her name? Annie Leibovitz did, where she's like...
Yeah, with her dad and stuff. And
well,
it looked
her
incestuous.
Well, there's the pictures of her like all tangled up in sheets and like it's got the next day look, you know, worn out makeup and stuff. Who in the hell looks at, what are you thinking? Like, what are you thinking? She was like 15 or something. I'm like, she shouldn't be doing it at 15, first of all. Second of all, like, what? And this is a woman photographer. I'm like, you know, what are you thinking? Is nothing important? Is nothing valuable to go, you know, this girl's 15. She doesn't even know what the hell she's doing. Mm-hmm. You know? And then they come out like, oh, we didn't really think it'd be that big of a deal. Of course you knew it was going to be a big deal and you want everybody talking about you.
Then she's going to end up being fucked up when she grows up and stuff and doesn't get that attention anymore, you know?
Well, hopefully she doesn't. I'm more disappointed in her father that he wasn't parenting and fathering her.
Yeah.
You know, why weren't you there
Where's the mother in all this?
And the mother, yeah. But apparently it was the father that was supposedly there or something. Mm. I'm like, at any point you go, hey, my little girl, she looks like she just had sex and, you know, she doesn't have any clothes on and she's in this, no, let's not do this. This isn't what we're going for, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's take a phone call.
Sure.
Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hello?
Nice to meet you.
Probably was not calling to be on the air. I love those things, man.
They call.
They get a wrong number and they're like, you're on the air.
That's funny. Oh, that's funny.
People are weird, man.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
People are weird.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so crazy.
So apparently a worker at Ohio State kills a manager and then himself. Because I guess he got a poor evaluation.
Really?
Yeah, in the university.
Man.
You know? I mean, is that really worth it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, isn't there other ways to take care of things than to go and kill yourself on top of everything for something like this, you know? People are nuts.
I think what happens is it's like we're all living for something, and sometimes that changes moment to moment. And sometimes people are like, all they're living for is they've got like a tunnel vision on... I'm sorry. They've got a tunnel vision on what they're living for at that moment. And it may be financial. It may be acceptance and approval from man. It may be you've made your job your life. And so when that falls down, you no longer, quote unquote, exist.
Right.
And so it really makes you, I think that's why it's really important to always evaluate what matters and what's eternal and what's not. And what, at the end of the day, what matters, because you can let a lot of things define who you are.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, just look at what happened in the economy and people, the people losing, some people have lost everything. Well, you know, so people did. And then for some people, they went from being very rich to not as rich.
Right.
It was different, but I know people that did lose everything. And a good friend of mine, he actually owned a few properties and he's, a science researcher, and you know, all he did was work. He didn't have any friends. He was working two different research jobs, which are both like full-time jobs, so he would never did anything but work. And he was paying down these properties and, you know, securing a future income, and then the housing market crashed, and he lost everything. And he lost his life savings, he lost his properties, he lost everything. And he said the worst part about it was I had no friends when everything was done. And then he got laid off from one of the jobs. It's like he went from living for this, not even really purposely trying to live for it. He just got caught up in it, like living for doing what's quote unquote the right thing and building a future, building security, but doing it at the cost of not having a life.
Right.
And then when it was all taken away from him, like just like that, he was alone with nothing. And he didn't even have...
Because he didn't really have a life.
I mean,
he was just working,
And he's so different now. Like, he's like, if we're doing shows or if we're having just a hangout at our house and eating, I mean, he's so cool. He's there. He wants to be in the mix. And he's just like, he's making time. He's taking up a photography class. And he's living life purposely now because he's like, I'm going to live. And, so I just think that's so powerful.
Yeah.
You know? Just, you know, having those bigger... pictures of what it, because if you're working so hard for a living and you're not enjoying that living,
no, that's terrible. That's the worst way to live. You know, you gotta have something to get up for in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's the hardest thing in the morning to get up when you're not looking forward to going to your job or whatever it is that you have.
Speaking of living it up, how was your wife's wonderful trip?
She had a blast.
Did she?
She had a blast.
Are there going to be photos on Facebook?
There was one of a palm tree with some sand.
Oh, really?
Some sea. That
the
was
ones
about
where
it.
She's up there dancing with like, woohoo!
No,
you know,
that didn't
margaritas.
Happen.
No?
That, I don't see my wife doing
really?
That.
Really? When they get all the people on stage and the, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, they know how to party down there at those resorts. That's
oh,
for
I bet
sure.
she had yeah. a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
She did.
Tell her to put more photos up.
But I missed her. She's finally back, you know?
Aww.
I didn't realize this. It's like, you know, sometimes you don't realize you need someone until they're gone for a while, you know?
Aw, that's so sweet, Sam.
Is it?
It's so sweet.
Aww.
How long was she gone?
Few days.
Just a few days, and you were, like, itchy, huh?
Yeah.
So you missed her a lot?
Yeah. You see, that's what I find about me. I mean, it's finally you brought it up. But when I don't work, I find I don't have much to do because, you know, I've pretty much built my life around the work now, you know? So that was the feeling, you know? It's like, what do I do now? I'm alone, you know?
Oh. and she helps you a lot, and she's your companion. I mean,
yeah.
She's your...
Yeah.
Aw, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
I heard it said, this lady wrote this in a book. She said... her husband came home, and the dishes were piled up. The kids are screaming and crying. There's no dinner made. There's laundry everywhere. The house is a wreck. The TV's on, blaring. Mm. And he goes, what? What's going on? She goes, you know how you always come home and ask me what I've done all day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, today I didn't do it.
That's and a good one.
And it's like sometimes... being appreciated for the things, a lot of things go unnoticed until they're not there. Like people that are constantly there that are providing little services, you know, the person that's always there saying hello or you're somebody that's helping out at the house or the business or whatever. It's like those things are you just expect it. And then when they're no longer there, the presence is missed and what they offer and their service is missed. And there's a value that's now illustrated.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. You know, when you break up a relationship, even when it's bitter at the end, it's still difficult, you know, because, I mean, you've built something over the years.
It should be difficult,
and then,
yeah,
you know, and then you just break it down, you know. It's not an easy thing to go through, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through a divorce, and I can tell you it's probably one of the hardest things to do, especially when you have kids, you know, to break up a family like that.
I think it's got to be really painful. I mean, I've lived through so many divorces.
Yeah.
So, you know, my mom got married 6 times. Huh? But no, so I actually wasn't living with her when she was going through all those different divorces. But
we're going to have to talk to her sometimes, find out what she's thinking.
No, I'm telling you, because she doesn't even know I'm on the radio.
Really?
Because if she did...
Are you guys not close?
No, we're not close. She called me actually the other day. I call her. We talk about maybe once every 2-3 months.
Really?
2 or 3 months.
So
yeah.
So you're not close.
No, we're not close. And it's but that's the kind of relationship you can't be that close with somebody that isn't stable.
Mm.
You know what I mean? If somebody's not stable, then you're constantly. I mean, it's just trying to help somebody that you. All I can do is really love that person from a distance and pray for them. And you know, and I love her. I totally love her. And she's so interesting to me because there's a lot of things with her that I've learned. I've adopted over. That I'm now having my adult life, and I didn't even grow up with her past the age of 10.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that I have certain characteristics.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, she's an interesting, funny, fascinating woman. She is just so fascinating.
But it's very unusual for someone not to be close to their mother, wouldn't you say?
Very unusual, yeah. Very, but you know, like I said, I mean, I love her, but you know, if she knew that I was on the radio and then saw the call-in number, she would call in all the time and knock it off the phone.
Okay, that's fine.
No, it's not fine. Like, I didn't
give her... We'd hang up on her.
But she'd call back, and that's... I mean, like, I didn't give her my phone number for years. Yeah.
Why would she call back all the time?
She's just not stable.
Really?
Yeah, she's not stable.
Yeah, that's tough, huh?
Yeah. I mean, she's not a bad person or anything. She's just not stable, you know? But
I'm sure it was hard growing up like that.
It was very weird, but I mean, I just had a... I had a really... I believe this is God, but I had an instinct that I knew at like the age of 9 I needed to get out.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why, because I didn't want to leave my mom. I love my mom, and she was my closest everything. But I just something in me knew that this wasn't okay. And like a 9-year-old doesn't know that stuff.
Right.
An 8-year-old doesn't know that stuff.
Yeah.
I was so sad that I was moving out, because I actually did. I was like, I called my dad and like my brother and I. We moved out, and we moved in with my dad. And I mean, it was so hard because I didn't want to leave and I wanted to be with her.
Right,
so I really think
right.
that had to be God's intervention, because a 9-year-old doesn't know how to make those kind of decisions.
Right.
A 9-year-old doesn't know what's good for them. But something instinctually, you know, I knew that this, it was like dangerous. Like there's something dangerous there.
Yeah.
Not like I was going to get killed, but there's just something very unsettling, unstable. And as time went on, I was able to really see, oh, wow, you know, if I would have stayed there, God knows, you know, what would have happened. A lot of bad things did.
Yeah. I'm sure God knows.
Yeah. He loves you, Sam, even though you don't love him. Or you do love God.
I mean, nobody appreciates everything that's around us more than I do.
There you go.
And I'm really into this whole God thing. I'm just saying that I think when you attribute a lot of things to God, I think it's dodging responsibility.
Oh,
I agree. Even if it's a positive thing.
Well, I see where you're coming from, and I do respect that because you do see people that, you know, God made me do it, or you see this, like, God this, God that, and it's like, do you have a brain? Do you have any choice? Do you have any personality?
But you come across like that.
Like what?
The same way. Like God this, God that.
Well, I come across where I feel, well, I can't say how I come across, that's your opinion, but I think that there's a difference between attributing things to God and recognizing his presence versus, hey, God made me do it. I don't have any responsibility, or I have no opinion, or I mean, I have a lot of opinion. I have an intelligent thought. I have intelligent reason for a lot of the ways that I do believe, too. It's not just, this is what I feel like doing. There's a lot of evidence to support it. And I can intelligently, I don't want to say argue, but, you know, defend my faith and belief to
right,
a point.
Right.
You know, and that, so that to me isn't like you know, trying to check out a reality.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I just look at what you're seeing is a little more black and white. Like, you know, you've got choice, there's built-in consequences, and there's built-in positives with those choices, which I do agree. And then there's the idea that God predestined everything and everything's going to happen and God this, God that, God that. I just see a blend of the two. I see that they can cohabitate together, but it's hard to understand that. And I don't have the answer of how it works,
right.
But I do believe that we have free will, we have choice, but I also do believe that God is in that with us and, we're not alone in it. So that's what I believe.
I see.
Yeah. But I also believe, like, I love giving, I don't always love, but I try and I love giving credit where credit's due with God. Meaning, like, when I feel like X could have happened in my situation and instead I got Y, and Y has brought good things into my life, I like to thank God for that. And to be honest, the way of living like that, it makes me joyful.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, if it works, there's nothing wrong with it. That's what I say.
And the key, if it works, there you go.
Yeah.
And I do. I feel like it brings glory to God, and I also feel joyful. It's like going back to that dance party idea of like squeezing joy out of every second of the day, and how people like, in all of us. I mean, we get busy, we get tired, we get wore out, we get negative or whatever, and we don't see the positives.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, I've heard prayer is just coming to attention. Mm-hmm. It's really, really savoring and noticing. And taking in all of the little things that we trample on throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
But if we really did look at things from a different perspective and tilt our head a little bit more to whatever direction, and we took time to kind of highlight things that we just all the time we just trample over, it would probably change our attitude and our appreciation would grow and our happiness would probably grow.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So really, I think that's what it is for me.
You know what? I think you should have become a nun.
A nun?
Yeah, a nun.
I don't want to be a nun. They don't have sex.
You don't
want
to be a nun. I know. Neither
Thanks.
Do you.
Well, I will when I get married one day, and it will be like, it'll be so good.
Yeah.
Oh.
But you do have sex with yourself, right? Like everybody.
Masturbate? No. I mean, I have. But
you don't? Like on a regular
basis?
No,
I try not to.
Why?
Because for me, it doesn't satiate. It just makes me want the real thing. So
really?
If I'm saying I'm trying not to be sexually active and I'm trying to suppress it until I'm married, okay? It's not easy. Everybody knows it's not easy.
Yeah.
Then when I masturbate, I mean, it just makes me want the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me kind of
but it also relieves you.
No, it doesn't. Not for me.
No,
I mean, I'll have an orgasm. It'll be great for 2 minutes or whatever, 10 seconds. But then I'm like, oh my gosh, it's not immediate. But then I notice the next day I'm like awakening my sexuality to a point where I'm like, okay.
You're not interested in being that awake.
Yeah, I don't need it. I don't need it. I mean, you know, definitely there's times where you're like, oh, okay.
I was going to go for this.
I don't believe you.
I'm going to get myself drunk and take advantage of myself. Hey, Kara, what are you doing tonight?
Come clean with that.
No, I'm being honest.
Yeah. No,
I'm not lying. I freaking told you I have hair on my birthmark. I've got nothing to lie.
I know. I'm just saying that it's hard to believe, you know?
It is hard to believe, but, you know, I mean...
Yeah. You're really repressing yourself.
I look at it like this, Sam. Uh-huh. You're right. Everything, to gain something, you sacrifice other things. And what I've noticed is that the times when I didn't suppress myself and I did what I wanted when I wanted, there was a certain gratification I got that was awesome, but there was also a repression in other areas. I didn't feel like I was loved. I didn't feel like I was special, you know, long term. I didn't feel like I had a resting, stable relationship that was going to result in a lifelong partnership with a person.
Yeah.
And so I was giving part of myself to get something I never got. And so I look at it like, you know what, it's really, you know, I did it the other way and I had fun and now I'm doing it this way.
Right.
It's not like I've never, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where I look
at it. So you should have become a nun for a limited time.
Limited package?
Yeah. Like limited time.
2 week package?
Yeah.
No. You know what? I don't think removing yourself completely from life is absolutely living it either.
No.
You know? Not that they're not living it. You know.
Yeah. So. I'm not removing myself from anywhere.
I know.
Yeah.
Just be happy you're married, you're getting it.
I will. All right, everyone. Kara, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
And I'm going to go out and enjoy the sun a little bit.
Woohoo!
It's a beautiful day.
It is.
Okay, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back here live tomorrow.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone. Commercial-free, original talk. Only on LA